Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the IL Preps Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Ty Zanders. And Ty, for the recruiting fans out there, this is the time of year that they have been waiting for. That's right. I'm talking about the return of college football season.
Love it. You kept me on my toes there. I'm in my happy place. You know, a lot of commitments out there in lacrosse, a lot of good football. Tide's 1-0. Very happy with that. It's Tua time, so all is well in the Zanders and Foy households.
No doubt. The Buckeyes are also 1-0. But obviously, I'm being sarcastic. The September 1st meant two things. Number one, we're about a dozen or so commitments into the class of 2020, but also Midnight Mania. You and I and the rest of the Inside Lacrosse staff went up to the University of Delaware on Friday night, and I got to say, pulling up to Tubby Raymond Field with the lights on, knowing what was about to unfold, was one of the most, invigorating experiences. When I got in the car to leave, it was thunderstorming in Baltimore. I was really nervous, didn't know how things were going to unfold. And I tweeted, this is going to be one of the weirdest nights of my career. Actually, I think I tweeted it was going to be the weirdest night of my career.
Wildest, I thought was your... Weirdest, wild.
Wild is weird. Sure. And it ended up kind of coming to fruition, I think. You know, basically, the concept was we were going to get 88 guys together. They were going to run through a practice and then divide up into four teams. And each team was going to play two games, and we were going to get out of there about 4:30, and that's exactly what happened. One of the curveballs that was thrown was at the end of the third game, the beginning of the fourth game, we went through like a really significant downpour, but it was one of those situations where you kind of felt like this is what tests the mettle, right? It had a very Friday Night Lights type dynamic to it, and that was something that I think permeated the event overall.
Yeah, no, it was really cool. I think it was just one of those events where I felt like I was smiling the entire time. Like, just given the fact that it was something that hadn't been done and we've been talking about for a while and working on and trying to build in a short time. And it was just like, it was just so cool. Like, even through the drills, I think there was so much enthusiasm from the kids and the coaches and the staff. Even though it is, midnight, it was just really awesome to be a part of. And of course was met by like a 3 or 4 day, trying to rest period, but I think the Red Bull was just adding up. I've quit it after a tough Midnight Mania, but it was cool. I think you all know I'm a night owl, and if I could choose, I would work from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. not another way around. So working that time and making evaluations, I felt pretty alert, and the kids were too. Like, I don't think any of these kids really weren't ready to play under the lights at 12 and 1 and 2 and 3. That's not easy to do.
So let's talk about it from the perspective of the play on the field. Certainly, as so many of the conversations about the class of 2020 do, it begins with Brennan O'Neill. He scored 4 goals and had an assist in both games. In the first game, his team was trailing. I want to say it was probably in the neighborhood. The final was 11-8. His team won the first game, and it was probably like 6-4 or something like that. And it was as if he flipped a switch. One of those situations where he's like, all right, it's time to start doing something. And, it was everything. And it was what you have become accustomed to from O'Neill. It was, a 12-yard outside rip, running through two guys. It was a look-away feed. It's to the point with this kid that it's extended beyond what I think was a pretty common conversation. Is Brennan O'Neill the best high school recruit of all time? To now, exactly what is this guy's ceiling? And let's talk about that first question first, because it was something that you and I discussed in the car on the way back home.
Yeah, and I think, it just kind of popped in my mind, like, you and I are fellow LeBron fans, and I've been following him for a long time. And I think, when you watch any player at the top of their game, on that level, they do things that just kind of make you laugh. Like, you're like, oh my God. Like, O'Neal does that almost every time he touches the ball, when goes to the cage. And like, they remind me in some ways of each other, just like the things they can pull off, the things that Brennan can pull off. It's insane. I mean, it's his footwork combined with his stick work, and his size is obviously so attractive. I do think he's the most attractive, the most intriguing, most polished recruit I've ever evaluated. And I think that most college coaches that have been doing this for 20, 30 years would probably agree. Like, he is. And you don't want to put like too much hype in a kid, but even if he didn't get any better, he would still be best in the class. And there are some very good players behind him, and you all will see that as we release these rankings this week. But yeah, I mean, he's that good.
And I guess to kind of address that more directly, you know, we're talking about, first of all, there's a distinction between how good you can end up being or how good you project to be as a recruit versus how prolific you are at the high school
now.
Level.
Yeah.
You know, playing at St. Anthony's with some great teammates and some excellent competition, you know, I don't expect him to break national high school scoring records. That being said, you know, his eighth grade season at Bayshore suggested that, you know, if the circumstances were such that it was kind of set up for him to do so, he might be able to do so.
Like a Golasso, you know, exactly. I think, you know, just coming on strong as an eighth grader and kind of continuing it. Yeah.
But the component of how good can this player end up becoming? I mean, we're thinking about it in the context of guys like Lyle Thompson, who is a number one player coming out, Steele Stamick, who is a number one player coming out, more recently a Ryan Conrad, a Dax Aiken. I think for me, the guy that I get stuck on the most when I try to compare him is to Tohoken Anacoke. And it has something to do with the unstoppability. The difference is obviously we haven't seen what Tohoka will become. We only have 1 year of college analysis, and he finished third in the country in scoring. So certainly, you know, that's a great benchmark to set. But, you know, O'Neal seems even more dynamic to me than Tohoka, and you know, that's one of the best freshmen in the country this season.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, he's more athletic, and I think that, you know, in many ways, when you have a stick like that, you can just, you can kind of get through anything. You can get through those double teams and game plans against you, and he can do that. So, yeah, it was fun to watch him, you know, under the lights and just performing that level during a time where, you know, his cell phone bills probably shot up there. I mean, I heard he had to put it away yesterday and just kind of, you know, went to New York City with his family. He had to just get away from it, you know, for a while. Because, I mean, everyone's going to want him, and everyone's going to probably, they will throw a full ride at him. Because, you know, I mean, he can change a program. You know, he can take it to the next level, and I think he will, wherever he winds up, and it could be Penn State still. But, yeah, I mean, every opportunity you can get to watch O'Neal, it's a pleasure.
One of either 13 or 14 players committed at this event. But opening up the lens a little bit, a couple of guys that I wanted to make sure to touch on. At the faceoff position, I thought, man, there were some battles. And I thought it was a really good contingent and guys who, you know, have already kind of made their stamp, so to speak, at the next level. Logan Tucker committed to Ohio State. Hudson Bone, who was originally committed to Holy Cross and has now reopened his commitment. But for me, it was an uncommitted player in Regan Enders from Victor, which you know, obviously means something among the face-off community. You know, this was a player who came in and you know, from the opening whistle, demonstrated the type of multifaceted approach. He can exit out the front door. He can exit out the back. You know, he can muscle out long clamps. I thought that Regan Enders distinguished himself to me immediately as a player who's going to be a good get in this class of 2020 as a faceoff specialist.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the night really showed to me kind of what it's been showing, you know, what the faceoff position has been showing all summer, is that it's up and down. There's so many different matchups, and that's kind of the name of the game and within that position. But, I mean, some kids that have been smoking their opponents and that particular opponent all summer, I think, kind of flip a switch. You know, when Kobe Ginder and Hudson Bond, you know, Bone, I think they really battled, but Ginder got the best of them, I want to say. And you know, I mean, I think it was interesting. It was very interesting, those matchups. You know, Logan Tucker, as you mentioned, did a good job against you know, Hudson as well. It was fun. But yeah, Enders, I think, maybe out of anybody that we didn't really know about, impressed the most. And I think no better timing than on the first.
Two different types of, I guess, kind of midfielders made strong impressions to me. So first were the goal-scoring midfielders. And so I think Allison Burt-Murray is someone who, I don't want to say he's a polarizing guy, but I will say that there's a spectrum of opinions as to what he can be at the next level. I thought he impressed and made a strong impression. Sean Cameron from New Hampshire Tomahawks, committed to Maryland, was a player who I was super impressed by his quickness, you know, particularly his split dodge and his shooting. He had a couple of nice shots from mid-range to long distance that I thought were really impressive. And then there was this other group of midfielders who were much more, facilitators between the lines, guys who were able to, you know, either dig out a tough ground ball and get in, win a possession, or clear in an effective way. And it was interesting how many of these guys were like in the 6'2", 190 to 200 pound range. I thought they actually were, a number of guys were on the team that I was tasked with following most closely. I thought Jack Conroy from Detroit Catholic Central in Michigan was really impressive. Asher Wagnon from Georgia was really impressive in that. And Quentin Sommer, one of Brian O'Neill's teammates at St. Anthony's, was really impressive as well. Any midfielders stand out to you?
Yeah, I think, to your point, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of guys in this 20 class that are two-way studs. Cole Herbert, I think, I was impressed with him. I think the fact that he was coming off of a football game.
He played football,
and he's getting offers for football, this month as a receiver, so... I thought he's you look at him and you're like, oh my god, that could probably play college lacrosse right now, just the way he looks physically. And he showed that. I mean, he's so good defensively, and will just stop you dead in your tracks if you're going against him. So he stood out. I think Michael O'Connell stood out. He's a Maryland Verbal and more of a defensive minded guy as well. But I thought those two really stood out to me. And Cameron, as you mentioned, great split dodge. I want to see him kind of increase his vision and kind of spread the ball a bit more. But when he goes to the cage, it's usually with a split, and it's usually being put on target. I like him a lot.
It was a big night for some athletic long poles, guys that were able to really pressure in space and then also able to make things happen with the ball on their stick, particularly win possessions for their team and get the ball into the offensive end of the field. Nicholas Redd from Wilmington Friends in Delaware was someone who I thought made a strong impression. Tommy Drago is a long stick middie out of New Jersey playing for BBL that has made strong impressions for a long time. I thought both Looney's 2020 long stick middies really impressed. Gunnar Chervon and David LaMarca from Loyola Blakefield really showed out there. And then there was another group of guys down low. Parker Sear, in particular, out of Atlanta.
He was awesome.
He got measured, matched up against Daniel Kelly for a good portion of the first game that he was in, and then did his best against Brennan O'Neill in the second game. I thought he showed a really nice base, really good ability to pressure guys, get out, prevent them from getting the spots that they want to get to. I thought that was really impressive. And then Ross Bergmaster, an Albany commit, I thought was super exceptional in his like kind of overall ability to support defensively. I thought the timing of his slides and his ability to make something happen when he arrived at the ball, it's a tough setting. Showcases are tough settings for help defenders to really show their stuff, and the ability to do that in that setting really kind of differentiates itself to me. I was impressed by Bergmaster.
And then I think on attack, the few of the knowns really stood out. Graham Blake and Eric Molliver and Russell Moore. Moore, I think, really...
He is so fast.
Yeah, and he's just great stick and great shooter, and he's excellent. He's one of the better attackmen out there, and Molliver is as well, and Blake.
I've got something to say about Molliver, and I wrote this up. Make sure you hit up insidethecross.com/recruiting.
And we have more coming.
We got more evaluations on the way as well. But the thing that really stood out to me and jumped out to me of Molliver in this setting was how comfortable he seemed. And I compared him to Bubba Fairman in this kind of off the field chemistry, leadership dynamic, happiness, optimistic, positive vibe that I thought really went a long way. And then when I saw him play in midfield in the second game, I was like, that's Fairman's versatility. It felt like it just kind of, and then, out of hotbed, prolific score. It felt like the comparison continued to push. And I was actually pretty proud of myself for coming out on that one.
I like that. I think, having watched both those kids and gotten to know them a little bit off the field, I think you can tell like kind of how much they enjoy playing because they go to so many events, and Molliver's definitely, that way. He didn't need to be there. His commitment to Maryland's been, set in stone. We'll probably, stay that way. But, he kind of embraced competition and was excellent, scored a couple goals, and it was pretty.
One attackman that stood out to me in terms of his nose for the cage was Michael Mauricio. I thought that his ability to line up on the right wing and figure out a way to get to the goal against a good defensive matchup, I found myself thinking, this is an end of shot clock type play.
Yep.
And it was kind of the first time that I was like, all right, now I'm thinking about recruiting in the context of the new rules.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think, you know, in general, it was a lot. Some of the guys that we've been watching all summer that impressed, and then some of the guys that we've been watching all summer and kind of, you know, continued to raise their profile and maybe surprise a little bit.
Let's talk about the goalies. I thought that there were a couple that I was less familiar with that really stood out. But ultimately, you know, a handful of known commodities. Started with Jackson Marshall. He's a Maryland commit from Calvert Hall. I thought, you know, he struggled a little bit early and then settled in and played pretty nicely. I think for me, the guy that impressed the most was Ben Howard, an Express North goalie. I thought he's a big body and his ability to react quickly, get down on balls, but then also not flop, not go down when he thought that was potentially where the shot was going to go. Stand tall and stay true. I was impressed by Ben Howard.
Yeah, and I think also Bobby Gavin, you know, Torrey Pines kid who went on after a solid performance at our event to apparently have a great you know, campaign at UVA's Prospect Day and is in the mix there. So goalies were excellent. I thought Nick Pecora, you know, on my squad, you know, played very well. I don't think there was like any one goalie that like blew me away, but they were all very solid and kind of, you were talking about help defensemen having a hard time, you know, at some of these events. I think it's hard for goalies, you know, at individual events to kind of, you know, get in there and, you know, learn names quickly and communicate, but they're all very, very solid.
Well, Ty, anybody that's interested in seeing more and learning more about Midnight Mania should head to insidelacrosse.com/recruiting. The story and the standouts are up there. As you mentioned, we've got photos. We've got a couple of highlights. A handful of bigger highlight packages are going to be on the way, as well as more evaluations. I think we've got 15 evaluations from the event so far up. I expect that to double and probably triple before things net out at the end of the week. Oh, we got more to get to, but before we do, we're going to take a quick break and talk about our friends at ZipRecruiter. So part of the Midnight Mania concept was college coaches coaching the teams, and it was my responsibility to staff up these teams. So we ended up getting 15 guys to roam the sidelines, some notable names such as a couple of head coaches in John Tillman from Maryland, Ben DeLuca from Delaware, Taylor Ray from St. Joe's, John Galloway from Jacksonville, and then a lot of high-profile assistants, including Dave Metzbauer from North Carolina, Stephen Toomey from Harvard, Sean Kerwin, from Virginia. And I'll tell you what, beyond those 15, I probably had another 30 conversations with guys that were interested but ultimately couldn't make it work. It was pretty taxing. It actually, I wouldn't say it ruined my vacation because it was pretty good. You know, it was fun to do, but it definitely impacted my vacation. If only there was a ZipRecruiter for staffing college lacrosse coaches for events. ZipRecruiter makes it easy. If you were to visit ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse, you could theoretically be able to find all the coaches to staff your job. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. They don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so that you'll never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. With results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse, the smartest way to hire. September 1st didn't just mean that we were out in under the lights in a beautiful setting at University of Delaware High. It also meant first contact with the class of 2020s, and as a result, we've got some verbals. Some classes are already starting to take shape. The first one, Colin Craig, goalie from Ward Melville, gives his verbal commitment to North Carolina. What was your reaction?
I expected him to probably be the most coveted goalie. I think anytime you get a kid from a program that, you know, where he started, you know, in a very successful program in Ward Melville, you know, you feel pretty good about that. You when you get a goalie that has that profile and talent, you have to be pretty confident. And Carolina should be very, very happy they got him and happened very quickly. So I was surprised to see how quickly that happened, that's big for the Heels. I think they could use some consistent goalkeeping, and they will get that in these next few classes with Caton Johnston, Will Pettit, and Colin Krieg.
Owen Hiltz, probably the other high-profile commitment coming away from the weekend. He is a versatile attackman slash midfielder from Culver Military Academy. Gave his commitment to Denver. You know, we've written a lot about Owen. We've seen him play a fair amount. It wasn't a surprise to me to see him commit to the Pioneers. I do think it's interesting now to see this pipeline from Culver, well, from Canada to Culver to Denver becoming even more firm. Ethan Walker, Alex Simmons just arriving on campus now as a Pio, and now Hiltz adding a member to the pipeline in the class of 2020.
Yeah, I would say out of all of the uncommitted kids in the class, this is probably the best bet, the most predictable commitment. To see Hiltz go to Denver. I know the North Carolina and Penn State were the other two, you know, in the mix, but he chose the Pios, and it's a pretty perfect fit. I mean, I think I've written before that, you know, he has a lot of tendencies, similarities to Jeff Teat and Ethan Walker, and I think, you know, a kid like that can play both positions. I think he's more of a middie that you keep in the field as much as possible. I think that what a fit, you know, there.
Yeah, it's interesting. John Posner has compared him to Zach Currier, and applying that comparison to Denver reminds me of when the Pios would run two shorties on the wing of faceoffs. Yep. And, you know, whether it was a guy like Jeremy Noble or Cam Flint on the other side, I could very easily see Hiltz filling one of those roles.
Yeah, no, me too. I think, you know, I just like how much energy he kind of plays with. And, you know, I mean, for a kid like that to have, I think it was like 112 points this year as a sophomore is pretty impressive. I think it's a great fit, and they have to be very happy with that acquisition there.
Towson picked up a pair of commitments in Bryce Kendrigan and Devin Rasmus. I believe both of those players are from Florida. Found that to be an interesting development. Additionally, Dartmouth with their RV picked up one of the first commitments.
I think it was the first.
The first?
Yes, right. It was. Reported maybe second or third, but it was the first one. Got to give him credit to the big green there.
There you go. So Nate Davis heads up there. A couple of Yale commitments going public in Kevin Cutton and Justin Carroll, and then a handful of other Top Gun Fighting Clams commitments as well. Tucker Spencer heading to Vermont.
And then I think we have one from Bucknell as well. Patrick Sequeira, an attackman from Staples, had a good year for the Wreckers, and you know, plays great ball with Clips and was at Under Armour with the Connie team.
And you know, one of the things that we saw a lot on social media over the course of the past week or so is Ben, if you didn't get contacted, don't be upset. Don't get frustrated. Don't get disappointed. And I think, you know, it's helpful to be mindful of the fact that there are still a lot of good members of the class of 2019 that are making their choices and have opportunities available to them. In the midst of all of the hubbub of 2020 commits, Justin Glad, a Juice Cherries attackman, committed to Boston University. And for me, that was a nice reminder of the fact that, you know, there's still, I believe it might have been Jerry Byrne who tweeted, 700 days before members of the class of 2020 arrive on campus. When I was addressing the players at Midnight Mania, right before the event started, one of the things I said was, this is both a beginning, a middle, and an end point. It's the end of the waiting. It's the middle point in terms of your recruiting arc, mm-hmm. and it's the beginning of the contact. And so, you know, be mindful of the fact that nothing is completed, nothing is set in stone, nothing is written. And it was actually really, you know, endearing and I guess gave me some cause for optimism to talk to a number of the committed players and ask what September 1st meant for them. And to hear them say it was another step along their road to improvement, you know, was reminiscent or reminded me of the fact that, all right, these guys understand that they haven't earned anything yet, right? They've gotten an opportunity, but they certainly haven't earned any playing time. They haven't earned, you know, any goals or takeaways or face-off wins. They still have a long way to go. And I thought that, you know, the opportunity to play at midnight on September 1st, you know, to these guys was representative of the fact that, you know, this is me trying to compete and show that I'm invested in trying to get better by playing good competition.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, just from that standpoint of maybe, you know, not getting a ton of contact on the first, I don't think you can really fret. You know, I think that whatever I say is probably going to be in many ways a cliche, but I think that, you know, if you end up not getting the attention you would have liked, I think it should motivate you, you know, and light a fire. I think, you know, cause you to work harder and it'll come. I think that if you think of how many more opportunities you'll have to play in front of college coaches, you can't really freak out if you don't get the love that you wanted.
And you also have to remember that, you know, there's only so much bandwidth that a college coach has. He might be interested in you. He might want you to be a part of his team, and he just hasn't had an opportunity to get to you yet, and he eventually will. And that's why this is a process and something that I think, you know, everybody needs to keep in mind. All right, Ty. Well, the last thing that we're going to talk about is the forthcoming October issue of Inside Lacrosse Magazine. It is our annual recruiting issue. We debuted the cover on Tuesday afternoon. If you would like to see it, head to insidelacrosse.com. To start, to set the table, what do you want people to know about this issue of the magazine?
I will say I feel like it's the issue that it's probably the best recruiting issue I've ever been a part of, or I can remember in the 10 years I've either been with IL, you know, or been following along, you know, my time recruiting rundown. So I could not be happier with how it turned out, and a huge shout out to Matt Cain. I think he's someone who, you know, readers may not know because he's so behind the scenes and, you know, not a known face or a known beard, I guess. But just an incredible work with the cover and all throughout. And, you know, I could not be more pumped of how this turned out. I know that, you know, for me, you know, as someone who probably leads the ranking process, in the past, I've worked on these rankings for 6 weeks, really, you know, did drafts, made calls, all that. I had three this year, so it was a challenge, but, you know, I felt like all parties involved did an awesome job. I had great help from some college coaches and, you know, very, very pleased with how things turned out. So it'll be fun, you know, really fun to kind of release these and, you know, unveil the, you know, the rankings online and have everyone pick up a copy and subscribe. But we're very, very happy with how this turned out.
Absolutely. It's well said. I think that, you know, Matt Cain handles the look and feel of our issues, typically soup to nuts. He took the photos that you see featuring these players, and, you know, there's more than a dozen in them. You know, that's strenuous work. And then obviously all the post-production to make everybody look really good. He does an excellent job of that. And then, yeah, I mean, to your point, you led the rankings process, and I want to compliment you on the diligence in continuing to move the project forward, knowing the deadlines that existed and all the work that you wanted to do in order to be able to say what you just said, which is you're incredibly proud of the product that's out there. So everybody make sure to check out insidelacrosse.com/recruiting. You'll be able to find everything there, including how to purchase a copy of the issue and how to subscribe. And as always, thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and review, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or whatever you get your podcasts. Tell a friend. Hit us up on Twitter. He's at Ty Zanders. I'm at Terrence Foy. You can find us at IL Preps and at @inside_lacrosse. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Inside Lacrosse and at IL Preps. Once again, thanks for listening. And we will be back probably later this week to talk about the rankings, actually. So there you go. Enjoy your week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.